Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, at least the weather's nice in New Orleans. I mean, the sports teams have come and gone, really, kind of. But the weather is nice, and ladies and gentlemen, that's really what counts. Hey, news of Nice Corp. And this is nice, actually. Rupert Murdoch, who has taken to Twitter, I mentioned this on last week's show, I think. He's got a legitimate Twitter account as opposed to the fake one that was originally and briefly verified as belonging to his wife, Wendy Deng. This is actually Rupert tweeting. Many questions and jokes about MySpace. Simple answer, we screwed up in every way possible, learned lots of valuable, expensive lessons. This is in a welter of tweets about the Consumer Electronics Show currently wowing them in Vegas. You may recall Nice Corporation spent about $500 million. Yeah, they have that. To acquire MySpace and sold it off for $43 million. Yeah, ask yourself, at what other company would the chief executive who made that decision still be? What? This marked the first time he acknowledged the MySpace failure on Twitter. But look, what else he's tweeting about a lot, especially this weekend, is Google. He's been attacking Google, which is fun to say anyway, but he's been attacking Google for aiding and abetting, for listing links where you can apparently download for free Mission Impossible. Free sounds good to me. I mean, it sounds like the right price. But, and I've just told you that now, you see. So I've done as bad as Google now. But I have to say, Roop, I understand. I know where you're coming from. And I think it's nice. Oh, that wasn't the musical suggestion that was apropos at the moment. This is. It's nice. Because basically what you're saying, Roop, is you think someone else is taking the money that you feel you are rightfully entitled to. And my only question would be, how many hours a week did you work on Mission Impossible? Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly, a German Catholic priest has admitted 280 counts of sexual abuse involving three boys. Do the math. Over the last decade, do the math. Saying he did not think he was doing harm. Named only as Andreas L., the priest told a court in Braunschweig that he had first abused the 9-year-old son of a widowed woman, parishioner. After being banned by his diocese of making further contact with that boy, he abused two brothers, aged 9 and 13. I don't think they were the brothers of the first boy. Thousands of Germans have left the church over the revelations of abuse. About 180,000 renounced their Catholicism in 2010. The priest on trial in Braunschweig was arrested over the summer after reported to the authorities by the mother of his previous victim. Sexual assaults were made on the three boys. No serial was used. No serial was harmed in various settings at the priest's house, on skiing holidays, in a parental home, on a trip to Disneyland Paris, and at a church shortly before Mass. The priest, who covered his face with a ring binder as he went into court, that's gotta hurt, said that while working in Braunschweig, he began a close relationship with the widow. Okay, good. When he was moved to Salzgitter, her son often spent weekends with him. Salzgitter. And the two would often go off on short trips. He would give the boy presents, such as a camera and mobile phone. Abuse would occur often three times a weekend. Weekends are different. The priest said it has not been his intention to get close to the boy sexually, and it had never occurred to him that he was doing harm. After contact with the second pair of victims was forbidden, the priest approached his first victim again, writing him a letter. Smart. That's when the truth about the abuse emerged. The letter writing. You know, like the Marines. Hey, by the way, I'll get back to that. When asked in court if he was a pedophile, he replied. It would be wrong to say no, but to say yes would also fall short of the truth. So I guess he's a Jesuit. Speaking of the Marines, the last two real serious embarrassments for United States military, Abu Ghraib and now the apparent Marine group urination over corpses that are at least alleged to be Taliban, have occurred thanks to the use of cameras by the military to record their exploits, their adventures, their service. Which, to me, is encouraging because, you know, there's all this talk about the attempts by the government to police the Internet on behalf of the copyright owners. And maybe to threaten or shut down Internet freedom. But if the government can't even keep people who it has under command control from circulating photographs of their own misdeeds to the detriment of the government, I feel safe, you know? That's just me. More news of the godly. An archbishop has asked priests in Ireland to pay up to $900 a year into a fund used to compensate victims of priestly sex abuse. The Irish Independent says letters have been sent by Archbishop Dermot Clifford to all priests in two archdioceses asking them to pay the money. The letter says the money will be paid into the fund because of the, quote, debts incurred in relation to child protection issues, unquote. Nice use of the lingo. The fund in question was quietly set up 3 years ago and is solely used to pay compensation for sex abuse victims. Although a spokesman for the archdiocese refused to comment or to acknowledge that. The priests were not informed how much has been paid out or what is the correct balance of the clergy contribution fund. The administration is overseen by the archbishop. So help pay for your brothers. You may not be your brother's keeper, but you are your brother's banker. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sing to me of your sadness and tell me of your joy.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, we're not number one. Running tally of the ways in which the United States is not number one. An example of American unexceptionalism. I guess you would call it that, wouldn't you?
Really?
What do you think? We'll play it like that for now. So this is from the International Monetary Fund, a chart of per capita GDP, that is to say the national GDP of countries divided by the number of people, the number of folks who live inside those countries, to get the, relative wealth ranking of those countries. And here's the chart. Got it right here. See? And, look who's number one. Luxembourg, ladies and gentlemen. Not Miss Luxembourg, Luxembourg. Miss Luxembourg is doing well, too, apparently. Per capita income in United States dollars, which I don't think they use there, but, you know, just for reference, $122,272. Oh, to be a Luxembourg. Oh, to be a Luxembourgie. Second, of course, is Qatar, $97,000. Norway. Norway, ladies and gentlemen, $96,000. Switzerland, of course, with the chocolate and the cuckoos and the banks, $84,000. I mean, cuckoo clocks. They don't have actual cuckoos there because they're bad birds. You know what they do. Australia, look at that. Why did you leave, Rupert? I bet you're kicking yourself now. $86,000. No, 66. I read it right. United Arab Emirates, right beneath it. Denmark, Sweden. These Scandinavians with their unfree economic system. What's that about? The Netherlands, Canada, ladies and gentlemen. Canada coming in at number 10, rounding out the number with the number 10 spot on the IMF's list of the highest GDP per capita countries in the place we call Earth. Canada, ladies and gentlemen. Just stone's throw away, just spitting distance. And yet, Singapore, Austria, Finland, again with the Scandinavians in the northern, Ireland, which I bet you'd say was a basket case, especially after the collapse of their banks, last year had higher per capita income than, oop, right next to Ireland. Ireland's number 14, United States number 15 per capita income, about $400 less than Ireland, from which people are fleeing because of the state of the economy. We're right behind them. United Kingdom down at 22, New Zealand at 23, and Brunei way down at number 25, because the Sultan takes all of them. But even so, that would average out as a GDP per capita. Anyway, we're not number one. Wear it proudly, or however you wish to wear it, or don't wear it at all. Put it away. Mothball it. Now.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
More about the housing crisis that is weighing down this particular economy. This from the Inspector General for the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the FHFA, nicely named, nicely acronymed, the FHFA, which regulates the Federal Home Loan Bank System. Yep, there's one of those. We got one of those, too, as well as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Federal Home Loan Bank System, you'll be interested to know, maybe, is a collection of 12 government-chartered cooperatives that provide a source of mortgage funding. They've been found to have not done enough to monitor risks. Yes, it's that old double risk reduction, risk management, biting us in the hiney one more time. The Inspector General for the FHFA suggested it had not been aggressive enough in reviewing, quote, supervisory concerns. Man, a lot of enhanced nomenclature and verbiage today on the program. It said the regulator, which also oversees Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, needed to take more formal actions against financially troubled members of the home loan bank system. It's especially important these banks receive strong oversight and early intervention at signs of financial or operational difficulties. That would, The 12 banks bring in profits because they're private cooperatives and pay dividends to their members, which are financial institutions. See how it works? They also buy and hold mortgage-related assets as part of their role in supporting the housing finance system, which meant they bought, I guess, mortgage-backed securities backed by mortgages, which, as Eve Smith has explained, may not even have been where they needed to have been to back the securities that were backed by the mortgages that weren't. While FHFA has taken positive steps to improve oversight of the troubled banks, the agency has not established policies, systems, and documentation standards that could strengthen its oversight. It should do so in the near term, said the inspector general. The home loan banks are able to borrow money cheaply because of a perception that the federal government won't let them fail. But their housing-related investments have been weighing on the financial health of the system. They lost nearly $2 billion on mortgage-backed securities in 2009 and 2010. Four of the banks, Boston, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Seattle, pose supervisory concerns, but the inspector general note that only two had faced regulatory enforcement during the time between 2007 and 2010. Weak finances, said a senior FHFA official, weak finances had led home loan banks to take on more risk in an effort to drive up profits on investments. I know, it sounds like an anti-Romney ad, doesn't it? As a result, the inspector general suggested FHFA establish clearer enforcement policies and seek to make the bank's investment practices and business strategies more transparent. You know, like the Federal Reserve. News of the inspector general, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And moments away, a major dose of news from outside the bubble. But, you know, conservatives have a point. When they rail against junk lawsuits, for example, Ben Stein, the conservative pundit and actor and pitchman, alleges that his position on climate change had him kicked off a $300,000 acting gig to be replaced by somebody who kind of looks like him. He's now filed a discrimination suit against the Japanese company Kyocera and its New York ad agency, claiming breach of contract, wrongful discharge, those can be painful, and messy, and emotional distress. In the suit, Stein says Kyocera reneged on a deal and replaced him after the company found out that he isn't sure humans are responsible for climate change. The deal would have had Stein acting in commercials for Kyocera and appearing at a company event. He says they approached his agent in December 2010, saying the company wanted someone with an economics qualification in the public mind, and Stein came to mind at once. An agreement was worked out over 5 weeks. The only point still under discussion but not in dispute were what kind of tea and other snacks Stein would have on the set, according to the suit. In February, Stein's representative was called and said questions had been raised by the Kyocera about whether his views on global warming and on the environment were sufficiently conventional and politically correct for Kyocera. That's the wording of the suit. Stein told Kyocera he's extremely concerned about the environment but unsure whether humans are responsible for global warming. He has said on another occasion, I think God controls the weather, not us. Of course, global warming isn't about the weather. It's about the climate. Two different things. Don't take it from me, Ben. Yes, he believed that God and not man control the weather as a matter of religious belief. Kyocera then tapped a University of Maryland economics professor to appear in the commercials. Quote, in an astonishingly brazen misappropriation of Stein's persona, they dressed him up as Stein, often appeared in commercials, parenthesis, bow tie, glasses, sports jacket. That's right. Ben owns bow tie, glasses, and sports jacket now. He's seeking $300,000. No, not a junk lawsuit. A man just protecting his look. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. The British government has admitted that a terrorist suspect whose case has drawn international attention was interrogated by U.S. officials and tortured during the 2 years he was held in Morocco. The findings resulting from an investigation by England's highest criminal prosecution agency contradict the denials by American officials about the case of Binyam Mohammed. At one point, the Obama administration threatened to cut off intelligence sharing with the UK if a British court ordered the release of classified documents in the Mohammed case. Mohammed was picked up in Pakistan in 2002. U.S. officials alleged he had undergone al-Qaeda training. After 18 months of interrogation in Pakistan, the CIA secretly rendered him to Morocco. According to Mohammed's lawyers, a claim that appears to be corroborated by the flight records of CIA chartered planes. He was later taken to Gitmo. CIA has never admitted that Mohammed, an Ethiopian-born British citizen, was ever held in Morocco. An American military lawyer who represented Mohammed has said the torture he endured makes waterboarding, quote, look like child's play, unquote. While being interrogated, Mohammed was hanged from a wall with his feet unable to reach the floor. According to his lawyer, then naked women were paraded before him. On more than one occasion, he says, men in black suits, masks, and military trousers made cuts on his chest and genitals with a razor. The British court said 2 years ago that documents supported Mohammed's allegations, but they were classified. Both the British and American governments objected to their release. This week's statement by the Crown Prosecution Service and Scotland Yard goes further than any previous official statement in acknowledging the truth of the allegations. They concluded, however, there was, quote, insufficient evidence to bring criminal charges against any British intelligence officer. After 7 years in American custody, Mohammed was released without any charges being filed against him. He's returned to Britain, married, and has a Facebook page. From Al Jazeera English, that was from Raymond Bonner, who used to work for the New York Times. This from Al Jazeera English. While the U.S. military is formally withdrawn from Iraq, doctors and residents of Fallujah are blaming weapons like depleted uranium and white phosphorus used during the two U.S. attacks on Fallujah in 2004 for what are being described as catastrophic levels of birth defects and abnormalities. Dr. Samira Alani, a pediatric specialist at Fallujah General Hospital, has taken a personal interest in investigating an explosion, that's Al Jazeera English's word, of congenital abnormalities that have mushroomed, that's right, an explosion mushroomed, in the wake of the U.S. sieges since 2005. We have all kinds of defects now, ranging from congenital heart disease to severe physical abnormalities, both in numbers you cannot imagine, says Dr. Alani, while showing countless photos of shocking birth defects. There are not even medical terms to describe some of these conditions because we've never seen them until now, she said. So when I describe it, all I can do is describe the physical defects. I'm unable to provide a medical term. Most of the babies in Fallujah, of these babies, die within 20 to 30 minutes after being born, but not all. A 4-year-old, born in October 2007, has dilation of two heart ventricles and a growth on his lower back doctors have not been able to remove. He has trouble controlling his muscles, struggles to walk, cannot control his bladder, and weakens easily. Doctors have told his father that the child has severe nervous system problems and could develop fluid buildup in his brain as he ages, which could prove fatal. Dr. Alani showed Al Jazeera hundreds of photos of babies born with cleft palates, elongated heads, a baby born with one eye in the center of its face, overgrown limbs, short limbs, and malformed ears, noses, and spines. She told Al Jazeera of cases of thanatophoric dysplasia, an abnormality in bones, and the thoracic cage that render the newborn incompatible with life. But we won. We're out, right? We're gone. That's over. From The Guardian, the head of the breast implant company at the center of an international health scare. This is a big story in the United Kingdom, at least. the 30,000 women who've had breast implants, many of which may contain not medical-grade silicone, but industrial-grade silicone, you know, like you use to do industrial things. The head of the breast implant company at the center of this controversy has admitted using industrial, i.e. cheaper, silicone gel in his products to cut costs. Well, all right then, why didn't you say so? But he told police he has nothing to say to those affected by the implants. Questioned by fraud squad officers, Jean-Claude Mach, founder of Poly Implant Prosthesis, admitted using the silicone that was not authorized and said company staff were instructed to hide it from inspectors. But he insists the implants, which surgeons say have a higher rate of rupturing, pose no health threat to women. He allegedly told police he'd order staff to hide the truth in 1993, 2 years after the company was established. We did it for 13 years without a problem, he said. New Zealand, which many, even though it's not on the top of the per capita GDP list, many folks in the United States see as sort of, some sort of paradise, won't let your name your baby certain names. For example, Lucifer. Justice is the name most often refused by New Zealand registrars in the last 10 years, according to The Guardian. Next on the list came Princess, 24 attempts thwarted by the government. King, 21, and Prince, 20. Lucky Michael Jackson didn't live in New Zealand now, isn't it? Can you imagine? Under New Zealand law, babies' names cannot be offensive, too long. 100 characters is the limit. Why, your baby's name could be a tweet. Or contain religious references, which that dealt with the 6 abortive attempts at Lucifer's. Not aborted, abortive. Look it up. They're also not allowed to be self-declared titles, a clause which accounted for the justices, lest they be confused with real judges. A secret U.S. More news from, I told you, it was a bubblicious week. A secret U.S. Army report has undermined a glowing Australian account of the role Afghan forces played in repelling an unprecedented Taliban attack near Australia's main base. The 166-page report obtained by the Sunday Age newspaper, not owned by Rupert Murdoch, raises fresh doubts about the capacity of Afghan forces to take over when Australian and other foreign troops pull out. The U.S. military has released this detailed account on the death of Afghan journalist named Omaid Kapalwak. The Australian Defense Force praised what it said was the prompt, professional, and coordinated Afghan response to that attack on July 28th last year, but the U.S. report paints a picture of confusion with Afghan forces failing to respond to a key part of the Taliban assault. Afghan forces were either absent or stood by and watched as U.S. forces attacked Taliban fighters who had blasted their way into the government broadcasting station where the attack centered. Adding to the confusion was the fact U.S. troops could not distinguish between official Afghan forces and the militia. The U.S. report also suggests the Australian response to the attacks was more extensive than the Australians revealed at the time. Initially classified a secret, the report is heavily censored before being released to the newspaper under the Freedom of Information Act. Even so, it contains details rarely, if ever, released by Australian officials. As I say, causing some doubt about the efficacy of the Afghan forces due to take over in just 2 years. The U.S. Embassy in Paris advised Washington to start a military-style trade war, according to The Guardian, against any European Union country which opposed genetically modified crops. This is information coming from newly released WikiLeaks cables, although there's no news there. In response to moves by France to ban a Monsanto genetically modified corn variety in 2007, the ambassador, Craig Stapleton, a friend and business partner of former President Bush, asked Washington to penalize the EU and particularly countries which did not support the use of genetically modified crops. Quote, Country Team Paris recommends that we calibrate a target retaliation list that causes some pain across the EU, but that also focuses in part on the worst culprits. The list should be measured rather than vicious and must be sustainable over the long term, since we should not expect an early victory. Moving to retaliation will make clear that the current path has real costs to EU interests and could help strengthen European pro-biotech voices, he said. Stapleton once co-owned the Texas Rangers with Bush. In other cables, U.S. diplomats around the world are found to have pushed genetically modified crops as a strategic government and commercial imperative. Because many Catholic bishops in developing countries have been vehemently opposed to the controversial crops, the U.S. applied particular pressure to advisors to the Pope. And on a related subject, the use of genetically engineered crops has increased enormously over the past decade, according to OMB Watch, without a corresponding increase in government oversight. Industry has fought hard against strict oversight and testing, has even blocked efforts to label genetically modified food products as such. Many scientists continue to have concerns concerning the ecological and public health impacts of such foods. In 2009, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine highlighted several animal studies that indicated various health risks associated with such food, including infertility, immune system problems, accelerated aging, faulty insulin regulation, and changes in major organs and the digestive system. In addition, tests that show that genetically modified crops can result in pronunciation difficulties as well as allergies. Despite these concerns, the agrochemical industry continues to push for expanded use of genetically modified crops with little or no oversight, disclosure, or impact testing. And the brand new corn approved by the Department of Agriculture by Monsanto, corn by Monsanto, approved by the Department of Agriculture, has not been independently peer-reviewed or tested in independent labs. The USDA last year approved three new kinds of genetically modified foods, alfalfa, corn, and sugar beets. One of the main reasons for the lack of independent studies on the health risks of such crops is that under U.S. patent law, companies are not required to reveal anything that could be classified as a trade secret. Monsanto and other corporations have restricted research on their crops, genetically modified, by refusing to provide independent scientists with seeds. Trade secrets. Why don't they buy them? Farmers can. I don't know. News from outside the bubble and elsewhere, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Look here, mom.
Since you had a plate of hot frog leg, jump back, swamp thing, even though you was the best thing I ever had. Sauce and lay me on a paper plate. That booty got me swimming like gumbo sauce till I just can't even see straight. Seem like it's been a long time, teacher, since you had your crawl daddy here. Jump back, wild thing, even though you was the best thing I ever had. Swamp thing, try to put your thing on me.
this is the show. And, yeah, okay, I'll deign to notice that the Republican presidential primary campaign has moved to South Carolina. I know, just way too much talk about it. But we're now at the point where actually something's happening, as opposed to 6 months of just yakking about polls and debates. The South Carolina primary, I guess, is next Saturday. How dumb and southern do you have to be to hold an election on a Saturday when people can actually go vote? The Christian conservative movement, if movement it be, organized an attempt over the weekend to try to rally around one candidate. They had the perhaps divinely inspired perception that having three or four candidates appealing to their demographic perhaps weakened their chances to stop Mitt Romney from getting the nomination. So they decided they might want to unify and choose one candidate. So they took a vote, voted for Rick Santorum, and Newt Gingrich was on several of the Sunday Yak shows today saying, well, but I got a lot of votes there. So that worked. That unified. He's not pulling out of the campaign. And the campaign in South Carolina has really focused on the role of super PACs, super political action committees, large money spending organizations which are supposedly and legally not connected to any candidate, even though they can campaign vehemently against the candidate who's running against a certain candidate. And these rather oddly in South Carolina, which is a state with a lot of conservatives and where Mitt Romney's record on abortion or on other issues of concern to social conservatives might have been spotlighted, oddly, the super PAC attack ads have focused on his career as owner of the leveraged buyout firm Bain Incorporated, a firm which bought troubled companies, turned them around, and either sold them or put them into bankruptcy. Did something with them, you know, or made them successful and sold them. They had, as anybody does in business, a checkered record. So anyway, the attacks, both by the super PAC allied with Newt Gingrich, but not connected with him in any way, shape, or form, and Rick Perry. Yes, Rick Perry, who was reported this weekend to have called at a Q&A town hall, a Q&A session, called on a raised hand, which turned out to be the upraised hand of a store mannequin. So things are going great for him. But he's attacking Mitt Romney as a vulture capitalist as well. And it just occurred to me that, you know, since hyperbole and in some cases fantasy have been involved in the campaign against Romney as head of this company in the 90s, Bain, that perhaps hyperbole and fantasy could serve him well in response.
Oh, I drive straight into town from the airport. Plunk right down, prepare to stay a spell. Came to do a job, wouldn't leave until it's done. Clean up the place, then get out and sell. And sell. From the southern right to work states to the factories of Maine, you'd seldom find an hombre who'd complain. When they'd see me coming, it was way too late for running. 'Cause I was the man from Bain. Yes, I was the man from Bain. Oh, I'd target all the bad guys on the payroll. Our posse would make short work of the mess. Savages on the warpath didn't bother us none. We'd always ride back out a big success. Success. Oh, from the shores of California to the great Nebraska plain, you didn't need a firearm, just a brain. The rifles were retired, it was people that were fired. 'Cause I was the man from Maine. Yes, I was the man from Maine. Now I've ridden out of town into the sunset. It's become a job for a younger man. Not thinking of myself, there's a race that's to be run. And spending all the cash that I can, that I can. Oh, from the great Mojave Desert to the shores of Lake Champlain, there's an open job and you don't need to train. You won't be a marshal, and the pay is more than partial. You can be the man from Bain. Yes, you can be the man from Bain.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. The president of Ohio State University apologized this week for comparing the problem of coordinating the school's many divisions to the Polish army. An off-the-cuff remark that a Polish-American group called a slanderous display of bigotry and ignorance. As you might know, I made those ill-chosen remarks during a question-and-answer session after delivering a speech. Gordon G. said in an apology emailed to a spokeswoman for the Polish-American Congress, I realized at the time I had made a mistake. G had been telling an audience of the problems of coordinating the university's 18 divisions. It was kind of like the Polish army or something. I have no idea what it was. The comment drew a scornful statement from the Chicago-based Polish-American Congress. That's a super PAC, which says on its website it represents at least 10 million Americans of Polish origin. The Polish-American Congress is shocked by the slanderous analogy used by President G and his slur on the military of a nation that has been fighting valiantly and efficiently alongside the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan, the group said in a statement. We're dismayed by the bigotry, blah, blah, blah. G realized he'd made a gaffe as nervous laughter arose in his audience. All right, so we'll leave him dealing with the Polish-American Congress. A super PAC. I call it that because, of course, their initials are PAC. Dateline Washington, just to make it clear, Dateline Washington, severe criticism from the Wildland Firefighters Association and the parents of a fallen firefighter, have committee staffers for Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski apologizing for an office pool on how many acres wildland fires will destroy this year. That's a smart one. That's very clever. They're sorry. The annual pool was run by Frank Gladix, who handles national wildfire issues as a top Republican staffer on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Murkowski is his boss. The parents of a 24-year-old from Idaho who died battling a wildfire last summer are expressing outrage over the pool. Someone sitting in a cushy chair in an air-conditioned office taking wagers while our men and women are out there fighting in the hail and heat of the fires. That bugs me, said Lynette Hamm. The Federal Wildland Fire Service Association advocacy group objected in a letter this week to Murkowski. Such a pool trivializes the loss of lives. A spokesman for the Republicans on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee said this week the pool won't happen again. We certainly understand this is in poor taste and it's been stopped. There was no disrespect meant. Yeah, sorry. Kind of. I didn't see the exact word apology there, but you know they felt it. All right. Or they wish they felt it. Dateline Vancouver, a Facebook representative, has apologized to a Vancouver woman who was furious at Facebook for removing breastfeeding photos she had posted on the social networking site. Emma Kwasnicka said since she joined Facebook, nearly 30 of her breastfeeding photos have been taken down, and her account has been temporarily frozen. This is a child's right to eat, a mother's right to nurse her child, she said. There's nothing sexually explicit in breastfeeding photos, nothing at all. She said a Facebook representative apologized to her and sent an email. Removing the photos was a mistake. The representative encouraged Kwasnica to re-upload the photos that were removed. And maybe some sexy ones. No, he didn't say that. Iraq's Interior Ministry has apologized to Iraqis for involvement in atrocities committed under the late dictator Saddam Hussein. It is the first apology issued by a state institution since Hussein was executed. Iraq's Interior Ministry did issue that apology, timed to coincide with the 90th anniversary of the Iraqi police force. I wish I'd known. I would have sent booze. The security forces apologized for getting implicated in the practices of the former regime. They were forced to carry out practices that were not their duties, they said. The police and army still regularly face criticism from human rights groups over reports of heavy-handedness, random arrests, and abuse. So they'll have more to apologize for 90 years from now. Deadline Colorado Springs School District 11 is still dealing with angry parents after a tech glitch sent out robocalls after midnight on Sunday. District Superintendent Deborah Ashby explained the district hires a vendor to take care of their calling system, and the problem is on the vendor's end, but the district was still apologizing over the incident. Former White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs apologized this week for insulting First Lady Michelle Obama during an explosive staff meeting, recounted in a new book. Valerie Jarrett, a senior advisor to Obama, said she and Gibbs have, quote, worked through disagreements. That means they still hate each other. A few words ushered in conversation over coffee at a convenience store ignited a community's worth of disapproval for one new town mayor. This is in Iowa. While drinking coffee with a group of friends in December, Ron Sadler, the then mayor-elect of New London, referred to two black boys who walked into the store by the racial slur "coons," according to a resident. The boys did not hear his remark. Sadler publicly apologized at a city council meeting after news of the comments spread on Facebook and in the Burlington Hawkeye. Sadler did not return calls requesting comment on the issue. On a similar note, Katy Perry's, she's a pop singer, Katy Perry's father, Pastor Keith Hudson, has apologized after being criticized by two prominent Jewish groups for giving a sermon that included anti-Semitic remarks. "You know how to make the Jew jealous," he said at a recent speaking engagement at the Church on the Rise. "Have some money, honey," Hudson allegedly said. "You go to L.A., still quoting, and they own all the Rolex and diamond places. Walk down a part of L.A. where we live, and it is so rich it smells. You ever smell rich? They are all Jews. Hallelujah. Amen." Unquote. Pastor Keith Hudson, the director of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, called the remarks unabashedly anti-Semitic. But he said Katy Perry is blameless for her parents' behavior. It's unfortunate her good name is now attached to her father's words. Smooth. The Church on the Rise said in a statement that Hudson's words were taken out of context. Keith Hudson was praying for different individuals and groups of people, and he asked for businessmen and women to stand so he could pray for them to be blessed and prosperous in their business pursuits. The comment was intended as a compliment, not a criticism. Senior pastor at the church said it's a very pro-Jewish church. Hudson himself has offered an apology for his comment, telling CNN he deeply regrets the hurtful and ugly language he used. "I'm not going to offer any excuses or tell you not to think what I didn't do was so terrible. What I did was so terrible. Wasn't. I'm getting the double negatives all mixed up here. I am not going to offer any excuse or tell you not to think what I did wasn't so terrible. I do insist, and God is my witness, that I'm not an anti-Semite," he said. "But that is the point. We could do lots of harm, even to those we love, simply by using words irresponsibly. I used images about Jews rooted in the worst anti-Semitism in the past. I used them without ever considering what they meant. I apologize for the hurt that I caused my Jewish friends. With the help of God, it won't happen again." Ask Tim Tebow about the help. Oh, sorry. In her first public comment since pleading no contest to misdemeanor shoplifting, Assemblywoman Mary Hayashi, this would be in Sacramento, apologized for unintentionally taking clothing out of a San Francisco store, but shed little light on what sparked the theft. "I accept responsibility and I offer apologies, not excuses," she said. She declined an interview request. She's from Castro Valley. That's more San Francisco. And Daimler AG, the company that owns Mercedes, apologized this week for using an image of Marxist revolutionary Ernesto Che Guevara during a promotional presentation for Mercedes-Benz cars, just because I guess they wanted to seem, you know, with it. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
I never saw a day so pretty as the one that I see today. These same old eyes are seeing the same thing in a different way. I thought I heard sky star talking. She was whispering inside my ear. I did not know what the sky was saying, but the message was clear. You can see me, you can hear me. When I touch you, you can feel me. I am looking in your mirror, and I see myself in you. I thought I heard sun, star laughing as she hid behind a cloud. She handed me a gift, a rainbow. Then she broke it on down. You can see me, you can hear. When I touch you, you can feel me. I am looking in your mirror, and I see myself in you. Well, I see myself in you. Well, I can see myself in you.
And finally, ladies and gentlemen, some news of the warm. There are simple, inexpensive ways to cut back on two major pollutants, soot and methane, and taking action now could slow climate change for years to come, international scientists said in a report published in Science magazine. Ways to cut back including building more efficient cook stoves, installing more filters on diesel vehicles, taking the worst polluting vehicles off the road, and banning the practice of burning farmland. These steps, which are easy to do, it should cost less than $250 to stop the emission of one metric ton of methane. The benefits would range from $700 to $5,000. These could, combined, reduce global warming by about half a degree centigrade by 2050, according to the report. So, cut down on your soot, won't you? That concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week, and your methane, really, really. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone via stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like you cutting back on that methane if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Hawaii, and San Diego desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Jenny Lawson. Her fame expands exponentially here at WWNO. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the more than 53,000 at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.